history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some seemingly ordinary Americans around you with some extraordinary stories to tell. And each week we have the privilege of meeting them. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way we learn a lot. We're educated, we're always entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, we're going to meet a Purple Heart recipient from the Pacific War in World War II. I am in Urbandale, Iowa, and an interesting story about the place where I am. This is where Central Iowa Honor Flight was born, and we're going to talk to a guy who was on the very first Central Iowa Honor Flight back in 2009. But I want to go way, way back. Leo Neubauer is 90 years old now. But tell me about your childhood. Osmond, Nebraska. How big a place is that?
785.
What do they grow there? Let me guess. Corn?
Corn.
How did I know? Did you grow up on a farm?
No. I grew up in town.
Uh-huh.
I worked in a butcher shop.
Uh-oh.
At a grocery store.
Uh-huh.
Ever since I was a freshman in high school.
And those were the Great Depression days.
Yes.
Before that. What do you remember about those times?
Pretty tough. You ate what was on the table or you didn't eat.
Especially if you're one of six children. You had four sisters and a brother. That's a lot of mouths to feed. Do you remember? I know this a long time ago. But growing up in that small town in Nebraska, living through the Great Depression, starting at the butcher shop when you're a freshman in high school, I hear all of those things. But what about your ambitions at the time? Do you remember having some ideas, hey, when I grow up, I want to do this and this and this?
I guess I wanted to be a butcher, but it didn't turn out that way.
Well, there were some things that happened in the world that changed all of that, I suppose. And I guess you would have been 15 years old when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor?
Down the creek, there's four of us. We always run together. And we down the creek. Somebody come down there and said the Japanese attacked on Pearl Harbor.
Did you even know where Pearl Harbor was?
No.
What did that mean to a teenager at the time to hear that your country was under attack?
I meant that someday along the line that I'd have to go to the service.
Did that hit you at the time?
We all know it, all four of us. I was the youngest of the bunch. I had one buddy. He's about determined he was on the enlist. We tried to talk him out of that. But he lost his life. Sailor. He happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Do you remember that young man's name?
Don Schomer was his name.
So he was killed before you ever went in.
And if they'd have known my brother had been shot like he was twice, I wouldn't have had to go overseas.
So tell me about that. What happened with your brother?
Oh, he was right away. 3rd Armored Division.
So your brother was overseas, and you were still back home here in the heartland.
He said, stay out, brother, as long as you can.
You got letters from him when he was overseas?
Yeah. He's got his jaws all artificial. His teeth are all embedded in lead.
From a war wound?
His jaw blew out.
Did you know about that before you went over?
No.
So when you got that word that you were drafted, how did you feel about that?
Well, how could you feel? You took it in stride.
Was it hard to say goodbye to your family, though, when you headed overseas? I can see that look in your eye. That brings up some emotions for you right now, even thinking about it, huh?
That was the only...
That's okay.
Only time my dad cried.
Wow.
He said to my mother that they're taking the last one.
So you've lived 18 years around this man and you've never seen him cry. And then the day you're heading away, you see that,
I've
you hear that.
I've never seen him then. He's a tough old bird. He's no German. And I'm so German that sauerkraut's hanging out my ears.
I've never heard that line. I'm so German the sauerkraut's hanging out my ears. I thought something smelled like cabbage around here. That must explain it.
Well, I couldn't talk English until I went to school.
You grew up speaking German in the home?
Until I cussed a teacher out.
In German?
German. I didn't know she was German, too.
How old were you when that happened?
I'm about 6, 7 years old.
So you're a little 6 or 7 year old swearing at your kindergarten teacher in German?
Yeah. Well, my mother said, don't you wet your pants. She said, if you have to go, just jump up and go if they don't want you to go.
Right.
Well, I just made it to the door, and when I come back in, why, she began giving me a scolding. And I told her, my mother said, she said, well, I'm the teacher. And I read a little German off to her, and then she kept her hit me on the knuckles of the ruler.
Uh-huh.
And I kept her getting me madder.
So what was the ultimate punishment there for your outburst?
God, licking when I got home. Because when Dad found out that I used some of the words he used, he said, but there be no more German talk to the house.
That's when it changed. That's a good story. So we'll fast forward again. So you're 15 when Pearl Harbor happens. You figure at some point you're going to get involved. Then a few years later, Uncle Sam says, hey, it's your turn. He drafts you.
Yeah.
What would you say was your welcome to the Army moment?
Oh, I guess when I went down to Fort Leavenworth to be inducted. Hell, I'd never been away from Oz with my... I'd only been to Grand Island, Omaha, and Lincoln.
You never left the state of Nebraska?
No.
Your whole life?
Until I went to the service.
So this was probably a rude awakening in some ways, huh?
Yeah.
What was the most challenging part, do you think?
Well, I crawled underneath that obstacle course with the bullets going overhead.
You know, I've had some vets tell me this story, and people today don't believe this. But you guys were crawling on your bellies, and live ammunition is going over your head.
Right.
So if you pop up, you're gone.
You're gone. Yeah. I really didn't become a man until I got overseas. But when the first bullet went over my head, by God, I become a man.
Where was that?
When I got off ship.
Was this on Luzon?
Yeah.
So your division, the 38th Infantry Division, the Cyclone Division, is known by the moniker Avengers of Bataan.
Yeah.
Because, of course, at the start of the war, all these Americans are left there. They're captured. They're marched for miles and miles, days and days, starving to death. They end up as POWs. So that Bataan death march had happened before as that part of the Philippines fell, and your guys' job was to take it back.
Yeah, we didn't get over there for a lot of it. It had a big dam that supplied the water.
Uh-huh.
Supplied from Manila all around there. We took that dam back from them.
So you were part of a rifle platoon, right?
Right. The scout, they called it.
A lot of guys wouldn't volunteer for that duty.
Well, I didn't volunteer.
Somebody told you that rule? First rule of being in the Army?
Don't volunteer for nothing.
So how did you end up as a scout?
The captain picked me. He wanted me to do that, so I just did it.
Give us a sense for how you would operate with that. What kind of weapons or protection did you have? How many guys were with you?
One, just two of us.
Just two of you. Out in front, not knowing what's in front of you, right? The whole nature of the scout position is you're trying to figure out where the enemy is.
Yes. If he's over there in the jungles, my God, you didn't know where they're at. They just shot at you, you got the hell down.
And you're a pretty big target. What are you about, 6'2"?
6'1".
6'1". And what were you equipped with? What did you carry?
BAR.
You had a BAR, Browning Automatic Rifle?
That's a good one. When you pull that trigger, my God, bullets come out.
Uh-huh.
I carried 30 rounds of clips.
Uh-huh.
And then I had a pockets full of bullets. And when I had a break, I'd fill the clips back up.
Tell me about your first taste of combat. What do you remember about that? Where was it and what happened?
Went up there, we went up the jungles. Have trees over there in the Philippine Islands. You can't see nothing.
It's so thick.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they hide the trees.
Were you scared?
Would you be scared?
Heck yeah.
Well, I was.
And you were 18 years old. And most of the guys serving with you were?
Oh, some of them older. I was just a replacement. I think there was 10 of us went to that company.
Well, that tells you if they need 10 guys, what happened to the 10 guys you're replacing?
Well, I got shot. I got hurt. Somebody.
Yeah.
And then he had foxhole that night. He didn't know whether they were going to have one of them. Banzai attacks. Have you ever heard of that?
Banzai attacks? Yeah.
Well, that's just like 4th of July.
So you're sleeping in a foxhole?
Trying to
sleep. So you're in a foxhole. It's the middle of the night. And what tells you that something's happening?
Well, lit up like day.
This is still in the jungle.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But all of a sudden the jungle lights up.
It's just like daytime.
Uh-huh, because they're firing so many weapons simultaneously.
Oh, yeah.
This has got to be...
fireworks going off.
Mm-hmm. And do you know where it's coming from? I mean, do you know where the enemy is?
Oh, only when you see them running.
Uh-huh.
When you see them running, well, they can't get very far. Everybody opened up on them.
So you jump to your BAR?
I let that go. That was for that purpose.
How long does something like that last?
Oh, hour.
An hour of maybe. Nonstop gunfire?
Yeah, 2 hours, maybe. All depends on how they got shot up.
And they just, the enemy just keeps coming in waves? And all you can do is...
hope to get them.
Because if you don't get them...
they'll get you.
I know it's hard to go back and remember some things, but I'm just curious. You're 18 years old. When you leave the States, you see your dad cry for the first time in your life, and he says they're taking the last one. You go half a world away, and you're replacing guys who got shot, and now you're getting shot at. Did you really expect that you were going to come back?
Well, they all said you're going underneath the Golden Gate Bridge, take a good look at her. Might not see her again. But I came back, I seen it. And I said I'd never leave the United States again.
How hard was that to deal with as an 18-year-old kid to face this chaos and death and destruction?
You take an 18-year-old kid. When I was 18, hell, I had a lot of guts, and I wasn't too concerned.
Well, now you got 6 kids and 10 grandkids and 6 great-grandkids to worry about, but they were a distant idea in 1945 in the Philippines. So did you have to dig your own foxholes?
Yeah, we did.
Was that easy?
No.
I understand one time you jumped into a foxhole and you found something you didn't expect.
Oh, he went coming crawling through. I thought it was my buddy had crawled. I said, what the hell are you doing? I see his foot going out the other side.
He was right there, practically touching you, right?
Well, he touched me.
So there was a Japanese soldier in your foxhole. He could have put a knife right in your chest. That gets your attention a little bit?
No.
No big deal, huh? And I've seen your Purple Heart, and I want to hear the story about the Purple Heart. But I imagine that before you earned that medal, you probably had some other close calls.
Oh, well. Just in here, I jumped up. My feet was in the air. My head was... I just exposed myself.
I want to hear some more about it, but can you give me some examples of some close calls before that where you realized, man, if I had done this or this, then I wouldn't be here?
Well, this is kind of towards the end. We was capturing prisoners. Well, with this big cliff, he was coming this way and I was going this way. And we would meet right here head on.
Uh-huh.
He was ready to surrender.
But you didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
So what does that feel like?
Well, you could have knocked me over the cliff with a...
with a flick of a finger? As far as what you were facing, was it usually machine gun fire, rifle fire? Did you ever have artillery headed your way?
Oh, yeah, the artillery. Until the Air Force finally come in. And then they come in with their guns and kind of shot right in front of the fox.
So you're fighting... and you've got your American airplanes coming in and strafing the enemy. But they're shooting awfully close to you, too.
Right in front of us.
Right in front of you. How does that make you feel?
It made it feel good.
But before Leo left the Philippines, there would be something else that happened right in front of him that would leave him bloodied and bruised and stuck in his foxhole overnight, having to improvise to give himself first aid. We're going to hear that story when we come back, and I mentioned his division's nickname, the Avengers of Bataan. Well, what needed to be avenged? We'll hear from someone who was on the Bataan Death March. And before we're done, Leo's experience with Central Iowa Honor Flight and how that grassroots effort to get World War II veterans to their memorial has impacted one of the men who started it. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.